Good evening. You are listening to The Talking Show.
Yeah.
On K-Chung Radio, Chinatown's only.
Only.
That's right. Only.
Only.
Micro-broadcasting radio station. My name is Nicholas Miller, and I'm here, as always, with the inimitable, the defatigable, Steve Cato. Why don't you say hi, Steve?
Hi, Steve. No, hello. It's me. I'm defatigable, Steve.
That's right. Oh, excuse me. Steve darts in here on a private jet every Wednesday. Unfortunately, that private jet lands at LAX.
Yeah, no
And then
kidding.
He has to Uber over here to Chinatown. And we all know that the Ubering over to Chinatown is not so straightforward these days, now is it, Steve?
Well, you know, there is that whole LA exit thing, and I had only tried it for the first time today. Typically, I take the flyaway, but yeah, geez.
That's one way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's got to be a better way.
I recently
way.
Went to Texas.
Did you?
To see Steve and Meredith and to exhibit some artworks.
Yeah, it was great.
I too had to go through that hellish experience.
Yeah, and it's like a music festival.
Yeah. I know, Texas is really creeping back into my life. You know, I go back every so often to see my folks. That's folks with a K, not an X.
That's right.
And but I don't go back so often anymore because my parents bought a cabin in Joshua Tree and they come out here all the time. So it's much easier to see them here than it is to see them out there. But I recently went back at Steve and Meredith's invitation. And then just a few, well, about a week ago today, I drove up to Central California to buy a truck from my uncle.
Congrats. That's great.
Yeah. So here I am visiting Texas, buying trucks. Geez, what next?
Yeah, soon you'll be, you know, packing heat and, you know, all that good stuff.
Yeah. So, Steve, have you been keeping up with this, the curious correlation between fracking and chlamydia outbreaks?
No, I mean, only since you brought it to my attention. I, you know, Austin doesn't have a lot of obvious fracking.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, at first when I saw the headline, I thought, well, that's just some clickbait.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes clickbait can be very useful to think through. And I found this one very interesting. So the thrust of the article is... That the labor entailed... are required to do the fracking in Texas requires immigrants, or I don't understand the labor so well, but like most things in the United States that are very dangerous and underpaid, employers seek out people that they see as disposable that they can underpay to do the things.
Glad you corrected yourself there.
Oftentimes, you know, for geopolitical reasons, these end up being immigrants from other countries.
Right.
Well, fracking in the first place is some kind of horrible attempt to maintain energy independence, whatever that means, for the United States. Yet here you have this real contradiction arising in the conservative landscape in Texas that, well, we want to be independent from the Middle East in terms of energy, yet we don't want to use foreign labor. Oh my goodness, what are we going to do?
Right. And as if having wars in the Middle East wasn't a sufficient solution somehow.
Right.
Yeah.
We could work on trade relations or pay our people.
You could do anything.
Properly.
Yeah.
Maybe take some concern with the safety of labor situations. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just a few ideas. But anyhow.
Make it a job you want to do. But anyway.
This is a kind of disturbing segue into our guest tonight, but touches on two aspects of the talking tonight. So we have, this one was years in the making.
Years.
He is not an easy talker to get
a
hold of.
No, hard to get a hold of.
Well, you'll understand why once you hear a bit of this talking. But so tonight we have, keep your legs firmly together.
Oh,
we
come
have
on.
James Spader. But there's a bit of a preface. Mr. Spader would not come to Chinatown unaccompanied. Nor did he want to just freestyle or give a speech. So he has required us to hire a foreign agency to conduct an interview.
Oh, I see.
An introduction.
Oh, I see. Wow.
So we have our friends here from Japanese National Television.
NHK.
Here to interview none other than hunk of the 80s and 90s, James Spader.
Jim Spader.
Special Talks, Big Message 98. スクリーンをにぎわすあの大スターたちの単独インタビュー、そしてその人間性に迫ります。夢見る者は多かれど、それを叶える者は少ない。それゆえにスターは大きな輝きを放つ。彼らが夢を叶えるために持っていた何かを感じ取ってほしい。彼らもかつては一人の夢見る少年だったことを信じてほしい。夢見ることに臆病で簡単に挫折してしまう日本の若者へ、ハリウッドからハッピーなメッセージを受け取ってほしい。1989年度カンヌ国際映画祭グランプリを獲得したスティーブン・ソダーバーグ監督のセックスと嘘とビデオテープ。この作品でそれまで脚光を浴びることのなかった一人の俳優が男優演技賞を獲得。一躍映画界の時の人となってしまう。その俳優の名はジェームス・スペイダー。ここで彼はビデオテープを通してでしかセックスと向かい合えないグレアムという複雑な背景を持った男の役を見事に演じきる。
Am I supposed to recount all the points in my life leading up to this moment and just hope that it's coherent? That it makes some sort of sense to you? It doesn't make any sense to me.
それまで自分の俳優としての生き方に迷っていた彼は、ここで明確な目的を発見する。私は独特な考え方と強烈な個性を持った役を演じたいのだ。
The Japanese fans have been waiting for you such a long time.
Why?
And what took you so long? Why
didn't
you come here yet? Because I've been waiting for you more than 20 years.
20 years. 20 years.
No, almost 15 years.
It's funny, I've been asked to come to the Tokyo Film Festival before. And the timing has always been terrible because I usually take the summers off every year and spend with my family.
Oh, your family?
Yes, so I'm always looking for a film to do in the fall. So usually I'm working in the fall, the film festival is.
Yeah.
And generally my work schedule during the year is I do a film in the fall and do a film in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And those both happen to be the times when I've been invited to come to Japan. And this year, my wife is opening a business this fall.
Oh.
And I hadn't found a film that I was interested in doing this fall. So I decided not to work. And so when they called and said, can you come for a week to the Tokyo Film Festival, I said yes.
How lucky. So I didn't know you get married. This is my first time. Wow. Because our journalist in Japan, you were number one. Anyway, It's very sexual. So anyway, you're the most wanted, irresistible man.
I am. I better not leave the hotel.
Anyway, so what is sexuality means to you?
It's everything to me.
Everything?
Well, I think so. I think it informs everything in our lives.
So, for example, everything is you and me?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it, I don't think that's something that you can just sort of put down and put away. I think it's, I mean, it decides what you wear in the morning. When you wake up in the morning, it decides everything that you're going to wear. It decides how you put yourself together. It decides how you're going to put your hair. It decides how you're going to, how you sit. It decides how you hold, you carry yourself. It decides, it dictates how you, what you laugh at. It dictates what you're interested in. It dictates on what it is that you look at and how it is you look at someone and how it is you talk to someone. It dictates how it is that you, how you relate to another person. It dictates about what it is, you know, I mean, it's all of those things that make up our desires and needs dictate every aspect of our lives, I think. I mean, by the same token, I'm 37 years old, and every day I realize how little I know about the world and myself and everything around me. But that's, it seems to me, when I look at the world around me, that's what I see. Now, it just maybe that I'm seeing it through my eyes. But it seems that that is something, our innate desire to be loved is not something that we can just put away in a little box and save it over here and take out when we'd like to. Well, our innate desire to be amused is not something we can just put in a box and put away. And in the same way, our innate sexuality is not something we can put in a box and then just put away somewhere and take it out when we want to use it. It's always there. It's always part of our lives. It's always part of everything that we do.
로산젤레스 상페르난도 발에 心に傷を持った10人の男女がある殺人事件をきっかけに微妙に交錯し、それぞれの人生のタイミングに遭遇する2日間。タイミング。それこそが今回ジェームス・スペイダーが主演する映画Two Days のテーマであり、そのタイトル通り物語は2日という限られた時間に集約される。
How did you find me?
I looked you up in the phone book under washout.
He's my ex-husband and we fell asleep and when I woke up he was...
Go ahead, shoot me. What are you, crazy?
I think he's suicidal.
We all have our flaws.
Anyway, your role in 2 Days is a very dangerous and psychopathic character that has a certain aroma that you won't can't resist. So, what did you do when you were shooting?
Well, I don't know. You know, those are both things that are sort of intangible for me when playing a character. I don't think that the one can control what they put forth. I think all I could do with him is try and explore the areas that fascinated me the most about him, and put that forth and see what came of that. But certainly the aspects that I was most fascinated with him certainly played into what would be the more threatening aspects of his personality, or dangerous aspects of his personality. And I think because of the fact that the things that interest him are the things that are frightening to other people. And if not frightening to other people, at least secret in other people's lives. He's not afraid of death.
You have 1 minute to decide the rest of your life.
スペイダー扮する無慈悲な殺し屋リーはパートナーダズモと共に万年4位でどうしてもメダルに手が届かないスキー選手ベッキーの夫ロイを殺しに行く。その頃落ちぶれた映画脚本家ディディが自殺を試みていた。
Can't you cry, man? How could you do it? nobody knows me like my babe. Mark! Come here!
What do you know about me that I don't know?
This is where you get out.
ロイは殺害され、事件をめぐって動き出した彼らに、殺人事件が大好きな刑事がここぞとばかりに絡んでくる。果たしてこの1日目は2日目にどう絡み合っていくのか。
Lady, we are the police.
He's fascinated by, not so much death, but he's fascinated by the passage from life into death. I think he's certainly driven by his own sexuality. It's something that is it's such an innate part of his personality that he utilizes in his relations with anyone that he comes across. He's fascinated, I think, by whether it's inadvertent or whether he's aware of it or not. He at least plays a lot with the area, the association and relationship between fear and sexuality and violence and sexuality. He plays games with people in a way that that I think, in a strange way, is so dominating because of the fact that he's setting the rules for those games.
1日目、リーはダズモと共に殺しを遂行する。そして2日目、1日目は全く別の人生を歩んでいた人間たちが前日の殺人事件を機に奇妙に絡み始める。主人公リーは殺しを終えると、仲間のダズモをあっさりと裏切り、依頼金を独り占めしようと画策する。彼らは自分たちを待ち受ける皮肉な運命に気づかぬまま、人生の選択という一触即発の導火線をたどってゆく。
You're a tricky son of a bitch. You almost got away with it. But that's your life, isn't it, Osmo? Almost, but not quite.
When it comes to playing a peculiar character, nobody can beat you. Anyway, you are the best actor, the current actor.
Thank you.
Your policy when you choose the scenario. So that your.
I think I'm just drawn towards the, you know, peculiarities in life. You know, I'm interested in that. I'm interested in perversity. I'm interested in oddity. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in. I'm curious about that. I'm curious about taboos. I'm curious about secrets. That's what interests me. And so those tends to be what I look for in work.
That's why.
I guess.
So every day, every time? Just when you're a kid?
No, it's been all through my life. I think that's what's interesting. When I take a role in a movie, I do a tremendous amount of preparation and a lot of thought. a lot of discussion. And then I put that aside and don't concentrate on it. And then I just concentrate on the screenplay. And I find, for me, I step in and out of a role fairly easily. I'm not someone who carries it around with me all the time. I'm able to separate myself from it, step into it, and immerse myself in it, and then step out of it. That's how I work. I think, you know, the films that an actor takes in his career are dictated by a lot of things. They're dictated by what that actor is curious about and what they're interested in. It's dictated by that actor's personality to a great degree. It's dictated by the actor's appearance. It's dictated by the sort of career that actor is interested in having. I'm somebody who has always been interested in doing a combination of a variety of different sorts of films. Sometimes a very big film, sometimes a very small film, sometimes a very odd film, sometimes a more mainstream film. I like that sort of variety in my life. I don't think I would be happy pursuing I don't think I'd be very happy pursuing a certain sort of film and just that. You know, there are lots of films that I want to go see that I wouldn't necessarily want to make. Well, there are also films that I want to make that aren't necessarily films that I would have gone to see. The choices are different. It's different, you know, and I'm lucky that way. I'm able to play good guys and bad guys and characters and leads. And I'm lucky that way.
Yeah.
I like doing that.
So, what is your priority in your life?
To continue to be curious. And to pursue that curiosity.
So I was just, you know, just thinking away, and then I just...
スクリーンの中では常にエキセントリックで独特のキャラクターを持つ役を演じるジェームス・スペイダー。その俳優としての顔とプライベートの顔はどんな違いがあるのだろう。
In the movie, you are timing everything to 1 minute with the stopwatch, right? So how's your real life? Are you punctual?
No. But I know when I'm late.
That's okay.
I'm not one of those people who shows up late and doesn't know that they're late. When I'm late, I know.
Because, you're a New Yorker, right?
Yeah.
Now.
not now.
Not now.
I don't live in New York now.
Oh, no?
No.
Oh.
I live in Massachusetts and Los Angeles.
Oh, so you have two houses.
Yeah. I lived in New York for about 13 years. And now I split my time between Los Angeles and Massachusetts.
Yeah. So, may I ask you a family?
I have a wife and two sons.
Two sons?
Yes.
How old are they?
8 and 5.
And any pets?
We have three dogs.
We have
two tortoises.
Tortoises?
We have a whole bunch of fish.
Wow, it's like a zoo. Who's taking care of them?
We all take care of them.
You.
And I don't know.
Yeah.
Any Los Angeles teenagers.
Yeah.
My children are much younger than that.
Yeah, right.
And so I don't really know what teenagers in Los Angeles do. I dread to think what they do.
Okay, what type of pet?
Someday I'll learn. In 10 years I'll be able to tell you.
So what type of father when you were in your home to your children? Is it very tough or sweet? Teach discipline?
I spoil my children.
Oh, it's good. Like your parents did.
No, not necessarily. I think that you end up doing... I think it's a natural inclination to raise, or at least with me, I found it's a natural inclination to raise my children in some ways quite the opposite of the way my parents did, mm-hmm. and in other ways very similar to the way my parents did. Mm-hmm. With me, I am very loving with my children.
Oh, yeah.
And I spoil them. But I believe in parameters as well,
mm-hmm.
That are clear. Mm-hmm. So in that way, I guess, there's a certain amount of discipline in our house. I don't think... I think one has to be very careful, or I find with myself, the thing that I want to be most careful about is that I don't try and turn my children into adults too quickly. I think there's sometimes a tendency to do that with mm-hmm. children, is to try and turn them into little adults.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to do that.
Do they see you a film?
No.
No. Yeah. So kind of that.
Well, when I was a teenager, I was in school. I left school when I was 17,
uh-huh.
and left home when I was 17.
Wow!
And moved to New York City. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Massachusetts,
uh-huh.
And I moved to New York City and started working.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, when I was a teenager, it was during the 70s.
Mm.
And in the United States, during the 70s, at least where I was, it was a period of experimentation. And it was a period of... which played into the natural course of when you're in your teen years, it is the sort of period of self-discovery. You're sort of coming of age in terms of your sexuality, you're coming of age in terms of your intellectuality. As that period of time seemed to heighten that in terms of our cultural history at that time, because it was also a period of experimentation sexually and socially, a period of change in the United States. Politically and socially in the United States, it was a very volatile time. It was at the end of the Vietnam War. There was a lot of civil rights issues at that time in our country that had gotten started in the 60s and were still playing themselves out well into the 70s. It was the period of the sexual revolution and also the drug culture was still very active at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I was someone, my parents were both teachers. I had worked from when I was very young to earn money. Spending money,
mm-hmm.
Because my parents weren't very wealthy. So when I left home, I was confident that I always knew I could earn a living. I could do something for work, because I'd worked all my life.
Oh.
I'd worked since I was 11 or 12, something.
Well, what did you do?
Odd jobs, working for people, doing mm-hmm. mowing lawns or taking care of, doing this and that, whatever you can get. And then as soon as I was 16, I was actually able to get a job and, establishment and, I left home when I was 17 and moved to New York City.
Wow.
And worked in a lot of different manual labor jobs. And did that, and all the while I was acting, taking classes and doing stage work here and there and film work, but paying my bills with jobs. I worked in the stables shoveling manure. I worked driving a truck. I worked in an amusement park. I worked at a warehouse unloading and loading railroad cars. And tractor trailer trucks. I worked as a messenger in New York City for a while. I swept floors. I had a whole lot of different jobs. I was a busboy in a restaurant for a while. So I had a lot of jobs. I don't really have an ultimate goal.
A goal? No.
I don't really have an ultimate goal in terms of work, at least. I mean, mm-hmm. I guess I just... I like to be surprised by the films that I do. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to do something different the next time. Mm-hmm. And I like to do something that surprises me. Mm-hmm. I guess that's my goal in terms of work. In terms of my life, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I guess to find peace and serenity, that's a goal. Mm-hmm. That's a,
そのスマートな容姿からは想像もできない演じるということへのこだわり、そしてその役者の時に見せる奇妙極まるキャラクターとは相反するように、私生活は平穏を愛するマイホームパパ、この彼自身が持つ絶対矛盾がより彼を俳優として輝かせているのかもしれない。彼は多くを語らなかったが、同期生トム・クルーズがトントン拍子で出世する一方、彼はその自らの行く道を悩んだという。強いライバルとの辛い比較にさらされる中で、彼が選んだ道は今花開いている。
わ
ーわ
ー、わー、わー、わ
ー、Dear me.
Well.Well, well, well, did you think that they were going to get into such juicy topics as sexuality, Steve?
I had no idea that Jim Schrader, our favorite KUSC personality, had such an intense erotic charge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's new to me. I had no idea.
And what do you think of the claim of Mr. Spader that sexuality is everything?
Well, I think along with eating, he's probably not far from it, really. I mean, as organisms go, right? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As creatures.
Well, I got to be honest.
Uh-huh.
I'm less concerned with what James thinks about sexuality and more concerned with the type of sexuality that he portrays.
Oh.
In...celluloid.
Hmm. Go on.
Right. I think as a young man, I was able to pretty easily project onto Mr. Spader, because he's, you know, he's kind of, looks all American from the Midwest.
Hmm. Yeah.
And he's soft spoken.
Right.
You know, he does plenty of...awful and aggressive and masculine things in movies, but
right.
He never really talks that loud.
That's true.
That?
yeah, it's very intense and reasonable.
Yeah, he's the expert at the kind of quiet yelling.
Yeah,
well,
totally.
Well, now, I don't think that's right, Carol.
Yeah.
he's always saying things like that.
Sort of the Christopher Walken feel or something.
And he kind of gets nasally when he's angry.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.Yeah.
Totally, that kind of vibe.
Yeah, he kind of has the, you know, Greek sculpture has that, where you have the incredibly masculine male figure, nude, rippling with muscle, those muscle, the promise of the potential of great feats in athletics or war or whatever. But they're always, for the most part, reclining, relaxing.
Right.
So it's a kind of, it's just a situation of pure potential. And I think Spader does that in his voice.
Huh.
Yeah.
Huh.
Right.
That's a nice way of putting it, I think. I've always enjoyed the sort of sizzle of Spader. But, you know, the funny thing is in later years, he, you know, what am I thinking of? Blacklist? Is that the name of that show where he was the criminal mastermind that the feds need or whatever, that they can't do without, that in a film like Blacklist, he's kind of become more of an egg, you know, which is interesting because it's still very intense. And like Christopher Walken is still very wiry and, you know, physically electrifying. And Spader has sort of become just like an entirely different kind of creature for which there's kind of, you know, it's, I don't think a role's been developed yet for the contemporary James Spader. You know, there hasn't been the right vehicle.
No, that's true. he hasn't aged terribly well. I mean, I'm sure in biological terms, he's aged really well.
Yeah, in human terms, I'm sure he's fine.
In the harsh framing of Hollywood cinema, he's definitely had to switch roles. Roles, character types.
Who amongst us has not in life?
Do you have a favorite James Spader flick?
I'm not into the deep cuts. So for me, it's just like Crash and Secretary, things of that nature, the big hits, you know? Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing fancy.
I like the movie Bad Influence.
Oh.
With Rob Lowe.
Of course.
Where James Spader plays a finance guy in Los Angeles.
Oh, which, wow.
I mean, have you ever met one of those?
No. We don't have those. Oh, yeah.
He's a finance guy who's getting taken advantage of by a jerk at work.
Oh.
And then he gets into a fight at a bar out of frustration. And Rob Lowe swoops in and defends him by smashing a beer bottle on the bar counter and threatening the other guy.
Oh, wow.
James Spader is very impressed, but Rob Lowe disappears. James Spader hunts him down, and they begin this kind of long, violent, erotic affair. No touching, but, you know, as homoerotic as straight movies can be.
Like right in the mind, just all of the mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
Cool.
And I think about James Spader's apartment in that movie a lot.
Oh, cool. That's one of my favorite things. You know, fancy interiors and thrillers. That's what I like so much about early Michael Mann, for example, is the set dressing is just sensational. But it sounds like an extremely, homosocial kind of experience.
No, I don't think it passes the Bechdel test.
Right, yeah.
Not sure. Many of those 80s and 90s revitalizations of Hitchcock do pass that test.
Mm.
I guess Hitchcock doesn't either, right?
No, I mean, what does she even say in Vertigo?
No.
Yeah, she'd say anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to explain, you know, the Bechdel test to our listeners?
Oh, well, I mean...
Yeah.
Of course we bring up the Bechdel test all the time.
Do we?
Because it's a test about talking.
Sure, I mean, that's true. It's one of the few.
Yeah.
Yeah, not many tests.
Who talks to who and how much and when and where and all this stuff.
For what?
It's a very talking show sort of thing.
We should do more.
Mm-hmm.
We should do all the Bechdel test.
I should get home and you should get back on that private jet, Steve.
Jeez Louise, I'll see if I can get it into Burbank or something. It'd be more convenient. Yeah, good morning, everyone.